yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas, this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated, please.
Good morning. The court has three matters on its oral submission docket in the order of their appearance. They are docket number 090905, Larry York, DBA York Tank Trucks versus the state of Texas and Wise County, from Wise County and the Second Court of Appeals District. Docket number 100316, City of Austin versus Harry M. Whittington and others from Travis County and the Second Court of Appeals District. And 100683, consolidated for oral argument with 100714, AHF Arbors at Huntsville and AHF Arbors at Huntsville, the Second LLC versus Walker County Appraisal District from Walker County and the 10th Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side for each of the arguments, and we will take a brief recess between them. The arguments are being recorded, and there will be a link to them posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is ready to hear argument in the first case, Larry York versus State of Texas and Wise County.
May it please the court, Mr. Bishop will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Counsel.
May it please the court and counsel. Good morning, all. I'm very pleased to be here this morning to speak on behalf of Larry York in his case and his desire to get his trailer back. This case is about a number of issues, as I'm sure you know from the number of briefs and issues presented in those briefs, but I think there are a couple of primary issues that lay at the forefront. The first is whether the residents of the state of Texas may collaterally attack a judgment entered by a justice court or other court in violation of the automatic bankruptcy stay through the use of extrinsic evidence to show that they were in bankruptcy. The second issue is whether the residents of the state of Texas have a remedy under the takings clause of the Texas Constitution to maintain an action when the state has taken actual physical possession of their property under Chapter 47 and excluded them from the use and enjoyment of that property for many years.
What would have happened if Mr. York in the Chapter 47 proceeding went into the JP proceeding and said, by the way, Judge, there's a bankruptcy stay, so nothing can happen here?
I'm not certain whether or not the Justice of the Peace would have known what to do under those circumstances, given the fact that our Justices of the Peace are generally not attorneys and have law degrees.
So you don't think it makes any difference whether the stay was urged at that time or not?
Well, under the decision in Cobb that we cite in our brief, the United States Supreme Court says specifically that whether it was raised or could have been raised at that time is not relevant to whether whether or not the court lacked jurisdiction or is subject to collateral attack. I believe it states that near the conclusion of its decision.
What do you think should have happened under Justice Green's scenario?
I believe to begin with that a Chapter 47 proceeding should not have occurred. One, because of the bankruptcy stay, but two, because there was never a dispute, or the ownership of the property was never contested or disputed in this case. The state held the property for 5 months before requesting a hearing on the property. They conducted their investigation, could find no trailers of this make and model reported stolen anywhere. The sergeant apparently never contacted the one person he believed may be the registered owner, who was the person that Mr. York's father purchased it from some two decades before. No one else has ever come forward to claim ownership of the property. Therefore, under 4701A, I don't believe that the proceeding should have taken place. But had it, I believe that Mr. York did present evidence of his superior right to possession through the insurance records, the registration records, the inspection records that are before the court, showing at one point the trailer did indeed still have VIN plate on it, and it was inspected by DPS and in his possession. He presented substantial evidence of his possession to that court, and he was the only one claiming possession before that court. And I think under this there's at least a statement in this court's recent decision in VSC that the one at the hearing who shows that they have the superior right of possession is entitled to return of the property. He was the one who showed his right to possession, and it should have been returned to him. Does that answer your question?
McNutt Company, was it notified of the hearing?
No, McNutt Company was not notified of the hearing. In fact, the owner of the McNutt Company is, I believe, passed away over 10 years ago.
Has this ever been brought to the attention of the bankruptcy court?
We have not pursued the remedy through the bankruptcy court.
And why is that?
At the time, Mr. York's bankruptcy was either in Midland or out in West Texas, maybe Abilene, Midland, somewhere out there. Under the decision in Cobb, it appears that those whose rights have been violated through violation of the bankruptcy stay do have a remedy in state court and should have a remedy in state court. Cobb holds it recognizes that the states have these rules like the extrinsic evidence rule that tend to give finality to judgments and make them somewhat unassailable on collateral review. But it also says that under these circumstances where Congress has stepped in and enacted the federal bankruptcy law in that case, that created a federal preemption to those laws and rules or practices in state court that make them unassailable on collateral review. So we felt we had a remedy in state court, and rather than proceeding halfway across the state, we could do it locally.
Has he been discharged?
He has. I believe I noted in our latest brief, I think that bankruptcy was completed maybe a year and a half ago.
What happens when there's a bankruptcy proceeding but there's been a seizure? What happens to the property in the interim before the bankruptcy is discharged in general? So you own a truck and DPS comes and takes it, and there's no stay that prevents the law enforcement from seizing a vehicle they believe is stolen even during a bankruptcy proceeding, is that correct?
We haven't challenged their seizure of it, and my familiarity with bankruptcy code is not that great. I don't know there are certain provisions that prevent any interference with the person or the property, and the bankruptcy code or the bankruptcy court may certainly have been in a position to step in and take some action at that point for interference. I'm not certain.
What do you have to say about the police power exception?
Under the bankruptcy, there's a police and regulatory powers exception under the bankruptcy code, and then there was the police powers exception that the state noted in response, in its response.
To which would you be referring?
The latter.
The latter.
I believe that the dissent in the VSC decision, Justice Wainwright, I believe, addressed that police powers exception, and I think that the state made the same sort of argument in that case, or the Solicitor General's office did in that case under Chapter 47, that it create the language of the statute and the fact that it is an exercise of police power categorically prohibits a takings claim. And I believe that this court, in deciding the case, maybe not expressly but certainly impliedly rejected that position in saying that no, you really need to pursue your Chapter 47 remedy as a prerequisite to pursuing your takings claim, as opposed to it being completely categorically barred. As far as the police powers is recognized by Justice Wainwright, that a lot of those cases, virtually all of those cases, apply in the regulatory taking context and not in a physical taking context. And as he noted, while there may be that big Miltonian bog that exists with regard to regulatory takings, we're on clear, dry land when it comes to an actual physical appropriation of property. And in this case, I mean, they've seized his trailer. They've had it in their possession, locked up behind a chain link fence for going on 5 years now. This is an actual physical taking of property.
If the justice court's order was void, you still have a takings claim?
I believe that I do because of their actual physical possession of the property.
Justice Guzman?
Well, I was going to ask about that JP order as well. What impact, if any, does the failure to call the bankruptcy stay to the JP court's attention have on the procedural posture that you're in now?
I think that it's fairly well established, and unfortunately I don't have any cases for you. I may have cited some in the brief, but I think it's fairly well established in the law in the state of Texas that you need not bring that to the attention of the whichever court you may be before. The bankruptcy stay is automatic. It operates regardless of whether you bring it to the court's attention.
The Fifth Circuit has seemed to now follow a line of reasoning that the judgments are merely voidable versus void.
You're referring to the Sykes decision?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Sykes decision was, I think, in the Fifth Circuit, actually recognized that it may have used poor language in drafting that decision subsequently. It's been cited in a number of cases and noted as a conflict between this court's opinions and the Fifth Circuit. But if I have the name of the case here, there was a bankruptcy court out of the Southern District that I do have cited in the brief that addressed the Sykes decision and recognized that the Fifth Circuit probably used a poor choice of words in saying that it was voidable when it really meant to say that it was a nullity and which no one could rely upon. And ultimately, the Fifth Circuit took that case up on appeal and affirmed that decision and basically agreeing with what the bankruptcy court had written on the issue. So I don't think that there is any significant difference in what this court is
saying versus the Fifth Circuit as far as the-
Very briefly, back on your takings claim, so they've had the trailer for 5 years. Are there lots of used damages? Was the trailer used for work, or what was it used for?
Yes, yes. That is a tank trailer used in oil field operations, and he's had the loss of use of it during that time period, yes.
Let me ask you, and you may have answered this, but do you believe that there could have been a taking when your client had the opportunity to raise this issue in the JP court and failed to do so or to appeal that decision? Do you think that that waived the takings claim?
I do believe that, well, to begin with, and I know my time is getting short, Mr. York proceeded pro se in the JP court, and I understand that we don't give grant a lot of favors to pro se litigants, but he did so at the request of Sergeant Martinez, who told him, you don't need a lawyer, it's just an informal proceeding. And that's the way things happen in JP courts around the state. You know, people go there, they refer to it as small claims court. I don't need an attorney. He went in not knowing. In his bankruptcy had been filed 2 years before, and so he didn't have any idea that it would prohibit this other lawsuit, and he had no idea to raise it. And so I don't know whether or not he raised it affects the validity of his takings claim.
Was there a trustee appointed, I assume, in bankruptcy?
Oh, I'm sure there was.
How was it? Do you know how the trailer was treated in the bankruptcy schedules? Was it shown as owned by the state?
It was listed in the schedules, and those are in the records before the court. That is part of our extrinsic evidence. I notice that I'm running out of time here.
You can complete your answer, counsel.
Those records regarding the schedules and its existence in the bankruptcy court are before the court. That's the extrinsic evidence that we're trying to utilize, and I believe that the state concedes if we get to utilize our claim should move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent, State of Texas. Wise County.
Mr. Michelle and Mr. Munson will present argument for the respondents. Mr. Michelle will open with the first 10 minutes.
Excuse me. I believe the issue we've been talking about as to whether or not extrinsic evidence can be presented, I think there are four reasons why they cannot. Number one is the long-held state law that extrinsic evidence cannot be brought in to try to collaterally show a judgment is void.
And if we can't, then you have to go to the bankruptcy court for relief.
Correct.
Why would a state do that? Why would a state send its citizens to the bankruptcy court for relief of a violation of federal law instead of just rectifying it itself?
Actually, I think it's a perfect form to do it. It's a federal law. It's a federal protection.
Well, we lost that war, so we're supposed to enforce it here, and I wonder why we wouldn't enforce it in our courts rather than send the debtor over to the bankruptcy court.
Well, I guess I don't really see that we're sending them over to bankruptcy court because the debtor has already filed bankruptcy and has chosen to go to bankruptcy court, so he's already in the court of his choice.
What if
seeking
the,
those protections?
What if the bankruptcy proceeding had ended? Could you still go back and seek relief from the bankruptcy court?
It's my understanding it depends on the type of whether he was in fact discharged, because if he had not completed his plan properly, he would not have received a discharge. Secondly, I think there are limited circumstances where you can go back and reopen a bankruptcy.
But is that, this could easily happen that the debtor would be discharged before he found out about a judgment against property, or
Absolutely.
After the proceeding had ended, but you think he could do that?
That is correct. There are procedures, when I talked to my bankruptcy counsel, that there are procedures under certain circumstances that you can go back in and actually reopen a bankruptcy. And in fact, that may be a perfect example of where no notice was given at all and the debtor didn't know, as opposed to here, it was the flip-flop. It was the debtor who did advise the court that there was a pending bankruptcy.
Is there any doubt that Mr. York is the owner of that trailer?
I think there was. I think he's presented, he certainly has not presented a title. If anything, the state has taken the position that the McNutt, if anybody, based on the evidence before the court, extrinsic evidence.
Procedurally, yeah. You may be right in terms of what happened in that proceeding. Is there any doubt now?
I'm not sure that it has been established.
What was the evidence before the JP court that York was not the owner, or that it was, or the property was stolen? Just an omission of the VIN, or what?
I believe that was primarily it, Your Honor.
That's it?
I believe so. And the inability to locate the actual owner. I do take issue with the presentation that it's not a dispute. That's for example, if I go to one of these Chapter 47 hearings and I just come in and say, I'm the owner, and no one else shows up, I don't believe that constitutes sufficient evidence to say that it wasn't in dispute.
So then the state gets the property? That's...
No, there are procedures that the Chapter 47 provides for the disposition of that property.
No, but if the state just drives down the street and grabs a car and takes it down and holds it, and somebody comes in and says, well, I think that's mine, and the JP says, I don't think so, the state gets the car.
Well, not necessarily. Chapter 47 provides a myriad of ways that property can be disposed. And Chapter 47 is called Disposition of Stolen Property. Section 501 of the Transportation Code provides that the property is to be treated as stolen. Section 31.11 of the Penal Code makes it a criminal offense to possess a vehicle without a vehicle identification number. So this is at its heart a very stated public policy by the Texas legislature to try to address these in very real terms. We have in three different code provisions on trying to how to handle these.
But isn't the point of it all, the state seems to concede now, that the point of all of this is to get the property back to its real owner?
I understand that's the state's position. That position now is...
That's not your position.
It's not our position. I think clearly the Chapter 47 is called, it's titled Disposition of Stolen Property. And it is an avenue to try to deal with the situation of what is perceived to be stolen property. And under 501 of the Transportation Code, a vehicle without a VIN number can be treated as stolen property.
But let me ask this, and I know you think we don't reach the merits here, but before the JP court, York came in and presented evidence of repair records, insurance records, and maintenance registration, and all of that. What explains the JP court's decision in light of that evidence, and none to the contrary except for the missing VIN?
I think that's primarily it, is there was no certificate of title of ownership. There was no insufficient evidence, and as best I can recollect, and not having a vehicle identification.
Does this happen often in Wise County?
That's the allegation. Granted, it was presented by extraneous evidence, which was presented, but you know, to say that that's often, who's to say? An examination of a detailed analysis of each one of those claims would have to be undertaken, rather than a disposition on a sheet.
It just seems to make no sense to me that someone would pursue this all the way to this court if indeed they didn't have an interest in that being their own vehicle, irrespective of the VIN and irrespective of what the statute says.
I can understand that stance, Your Honor, and I think from our practice, though, I've had to deal with a lot of prosecutions of lawsuits that I never understood. In that respect, yes, they're taken up here. There may be other issues involved while this case is proceeding, but that would be just speculation on my part.
What does Wise County believe the purpose of Chapter 47 is, if not to get the property to the owner?
I think the purpose of Chapter 47 is a mechanism to dispose of property that has been seized pursuant to the Transportation Code. Whatever mechanism that is, it may not necessarily just to get it back to the rightful owner, but it, that is a that is a part of the process, but is a, it's a property, I mean, it's a reality. I call it a reality statute. We've got this vehicle here. We are what are we supposed to do with it?
And it it's very difficult to understand the government arguing that when there's a victim, we should further the insult by taking the property and disposing of it ourselves and keeping the money.
Well,
that seems to add insult to injury.
No, but that's not Wise County's. That is not what Wise County is doing.
But what effort has it made to get the tank to the owner?
It has. It is upholding or going, trying to uphold the valid rulings of the courts.
It is trying to tell me that again.
It's following the valid orders of the court which had not been appealed, and. For them to unilaterally then follow a judicial decision that said it was not the owner, and of which Wise County was not the petitioner of this, and this will get to the taking case as well. Wise County did not seize this. This was seized by the department. There were three other governmental entities that were involved before it ever gets to Wise County. You've got the DPS, you've got the state of Texas petitioning, you've got the Justice Court, and then it gets awarded to the state of Texas to hand it off to Wise County. So to say that Wise County went in there and took this trailer is inaccurate.
How old was the trailer at the time they took it?
Apparently it was, best we can tell, old.
Like how, 20 years old?
Perhaps.
So not to have a VIN on there after 20 years, probably not that unusual, is it?
It's a crime.
So Wise County's position is that you agree with the dissent in the Court of Appeals. The JP determined ownership against York. York didn't properly appeal. That issue's done.
Yes.
So is it also your position then that we shouldn't consider the affidavit filed in the Court of County Court at Law, rather, from the registered owner that York had indeed bought the trailer from him? So that's just, we can't even look at that because JP's decision is final.
Yes, there was a remedy by appeal, and Justice Wainwright, I guess the burning question is, I know Justice Heck, you said, why not go to bankruptcy court? In all due respect, that's the place to go. It's gonna afford, I think the question back to opposing counsel is why didn't he? Just because it's not convenient? I'll tell you, there's a reason why, and I think it's because he didn't want to go back to bankruptcy court. And he didn't want this issue heard by a court in the trustee who has supervisory power, because it's really actually property of the debtor, of the trustee at this point, and not the debtor. He would have gone back to that court. So why did he pursue this roundabout collateral attack when the statute was amended in 1978 to allow a spot-on remedy to cure? And why come in then and inject this federal preemption controversy between state court, federal court, Chapter 47, and all of those efforts when it could have been squarely addressed in one court?
Chapter 47 is not that great a statute, frankly.
No, it's not.
The criminal forfeiture statute requires notice to all the interested parties, has a well-defined procedure, it works properly. Chapter 47 doesn't even require notice to all the interested parties. Now, the JP's, the Texas Justice Court's Training Center desk book advises the JPs to provide notice, but the statute itself doesn't require notice. It requires that the officer identify, prepare a list of the interested parties, but nowhere does it require notice to those parties. If McNutt had been noticed and could have shown up, then this would have been resolved as to ownership if it's actually true that McNutt sold the property to York. It would have been done at the Chapter 47 hearing. But the hearing procedures just... And then you have to also request an appeal immediately at the end of the hearing.
Correct.
Not 5 days, not 10 days, not 20 days, immediately at the end, orally. If you don't, you waive appeal, which is what happened here, which is why you say York doesn't have a remedy because ownership's been declared against him and he failed to appeal.
Well, as far as declared to be the owner, I think there's two aspects to that. One is the only issue York presented to the Justice of the Peace was that I was the owner of the trailer. So in that respect, the application of the automatic stay didn't apply. Secondly, with regard to notice, if McNutt, because it wouldn't be property of the debtor. And I think both sides agree that state court and federal court have concurrent jurisdiction to decide whether a particular piece of property is property of the debtor or not, subject to being challenged and set aside by bankruptcy court, which dovetails into the procedures here, at least at play in this case. Justice Wainwright, is once again, I think all of these issues, all the concerns that the court has, could have been directly alleviated by a simple procedure of presenting this to the bankruptcy court. These all would have been wrapped up in one. In fact, as I said, the code was amended to allow that to occur.
Or by noticing McNutt and having McNutt at the hearing, which didn't happen.
That is correct.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the state of Texas.
May it please the court. Justice Wainwright, I'd like to talk about your concerns about Article 47, because I think I can explain it. 47.01A, not to be confused with 47.01 Part Sub A, is a statutory replacement for the common law replevin mechanism. And it's a light procedural requirement, because the end result is merely a judgment of possession, which should then, at a common law, you could have brought a writ of trover or debt in lieu or another common law action against the recipient of the replevied property in a separate court of law. 01A, which is separate and apart from the rest of Article 47, is meant to replicate that narrow definition. That's why you have less procedure. That's why you have less procedure surrounding the determination, and it's why it can't have preclusive effect about ownership. An 01A proceeding cannot result in any determination of ownership, and this is where we part ways a little bit with the county. And that's because...
Let me ask a question here to make sure I understand. You said 4701A is different from the rest of Chapter 47.
Yes.
Interesting point, because 4705 says if the court has any doubt as to the ownership of the property, it can require a bond, suggesting ownership is the issue.
5 doesn't apply to ONA.
I'm sorry?
5 doesn't apply to ONA. 5 only applies to 1, 3, and 4, in which case the test is on the plaintiff's text of the statute ownership.
And how do you determine that 05 does not apply to 01A?
Because it says if there's doubt as to a determination of ownership. If you're properly applying 01A, subsection B, you never determine ownership. It says you determine possession based on whoever is noticed and shows up to the hearing. And then it goes to the state, but the state doesn't establish ownership. Ownership only goes to the state if there's insufficient evidence to
counsel,
show.
Counsel, 4701AB says if it is shown in a hearing that probable cause exists to believe the property was acquired by theft or by another manner, and that the identity of the actual owner of the property cannot be determined,
The
court shall order the peace officer to do a couple of things. So again, ownership in 4701A, it suggests that ownership can be an issue, not just possession.
Ownership can be an issue, but it can't be determined. Notice B specifically says that the identity of the actual owner of the property cannot be determined. It doesn't say that the JP court has the power to determine who the actual owner of the property is. That's the power that you have under 2. That's the power that you have in an examining hearing under 3. And I think this is important to remember. The rest of Article 47 was adopted in about this form in 1857 by the 6th legislature. It sets out procedures at various stages in the criminal process in a prosecution of a crime to return property to its owner on a determination of ownership based on the evidence in the criminal proceeding. So either at the first examination hearing, during the trial, or afterwards. That's why the test is ownership. ONA is added in 1977 because there's a problem. Following Rule 709 of the Rules of Civil Procedure was made things difficult for property owners who wanted to get their property out of the lockup when there wasn't a criminal proceeding underway. So it just sets up a completely different set of rights that's meant to replace the common law replevy scheme. The rest of Article 47 talks about what you do if there's a trial.
The troubling thing about it is it doesn't seem to be designed to get the property back to the owner. It seems to be designed to for the state to hold on to property, which hard to see the rationale of that.
I think if you take away the overlay of the transportation code issue, so putting that aside, it is meant to get to the person who has, you know, the best showing of ownership, of possession, so that they can go and fight it out, not in JP court, in a court that has jurisdiction to resolve title to personal property. So if you don't have this overlay of the vehicle issue, I think it is pretty efficient that way. You know,
well, except that, you know, the county says, well, this was a crime not to possess it. Well, it's a misdemeanor. Well, it's a felony to take it off. Well, the sandblaster was never prosecuted. So it never comes to a head. And meanwhile, the state just keeps the property.
I think all of that's irrelevant. I think the only thing that's relevant is 0.158 of Chapter 501 of the Transportation Code, which instructs law enforcement to treat VINless vehicles as stolen. And that's why there's probable cause to believe that the trailer was obtained by theft, because there's that statutory instruction to treat VINless vehicles that way.
But it seems to me the government's interest in treating property as stolen is to get it back to the people who own it.
Well, but the reason that you want to treat it as stolen when you find it on the highway is so that the government automatically seizes it in case it is stolen, so that they have to whoever's looking for their property has the time to get there if they want to institute their own 47 proceeding, or if the government institutes a 47 proceeding.
I don't think anyone on the bench side disagrees that there should be expedited procedures for dealing with property there's probable cause to believe has been stolen. The question is, with lack of notice to interested parties, not being required in Chapter 47, and other issues that are raised, is this a deficient procedure? And does it result in someone other than the owner actually getting the property?
I think if you probably construe it to have only a limited effect of determining a right of possession, the procedure isn't effective. I do think that if you construe Article 47 to determine title or ownership, then those procedures do cause some concern about due process.
And what was the argument that York did not have the sufficient evidence of right of possession at the hearing?
His right of possession isn't at issue because the trial court's order says insufficient evidence, and then the bill of review says insufficient evidence of ownership.
I understand that.
In that case, his possession was never determined.
You're the judge now. Mm-hmm. What is the evidence at the hearing that York did not have the superior right of possession?
There is no evidence that he did not have the superior right of possession.
So he should have gotten it.
There is no evidence.
So he should have gotten the trailer?
No. No, he can't have gotten the trailer because there was no insufficient evidence to show that you could, in a subsequent proceeding, show ownership. The title certificate had no attachment to Mr. York, and that's the only thing that isn't exactly the kind of evidence that if I stole a car and then I wanted to go to an Article 47 proceeding after the police had taken it back, I'd take a picture of it in my driveway, I'd take it and get a new license registration, I'd get it inspected, I'd have it painted, I'd do all these things, and it would look like I owned it. Those are all proof of possession, but they are not proof of ownership. You have to go back to title, and it's worth pointing out that for most of the 90s until 2001, under the Transportation Code in 74.01A, a certificate of title was rebuttable evidence of possession and ownership under this proceeding, and the legislature took that away. But I think that the touchstone has always been, can you bring it back to a title? But moreover, I think that because the problem is not the paucity of evidence of possession, but the lack of evidence that you can establish ownership, that means that this case wouldn't be res judicata to a subsequent Article 47 proceeding by Mr. York.
Let me ask you before your time expires. In the Continental Casing case, we basically followed Kalb. And the Supreme Court has been very insistent that lower courts follow its prior rulings and let them reexamine it when they choose to do so. In Sykes, the Fifth Circuit said, well, 362 has changed. D's there and it didn't used to be. Why shouldn't we continue to follow Cobb?
Well, Cobb discusses subsection N of the Fraser-Lumke Act, which is pretty much 180-degree about-face from 362. They're completely different statutory mechanisms. Subsection N was an ouster of jurisdiction that automatically attached to any trial court proceeding or any attachment or sale of the property. 362 in sharp contrast, is a stay that has exceptions. So we know that at least in police power cases, for example, a state court could proceed on any proceeding that has to do with the rights of the bankrupt state. There are avoidances, and there's a special avoidance for parties, good faith purchasers who are have property transferred to them when they don't know about this stay. All of which is kind of summed up in subsection D of 362, which says that the bankruptcy court has the power to retroactively annul the stay in order to validate or ratify the state court's determination. By definition, either under federal law, you know, the Espinoza case talks about what voidness is for the U.S. Supreme Court, or under Texas law for 100 years, if something is subject to post-judgment ratification, it is by definition voidable, not void for Texas procedure purposes. And Kalb's, you know, dicta discussing collateral attack is completely irrelevant because that addressed the ouster of jurisdiction provision of subsection N, not the complicated stay mechanism, which, by the way, you know, this is really a preemption issue, right? What did Congress intend?
You were about to say where you parted company from Wise County.
Oh, we part company from Wise County, and that we think that the way you figure out what the Article 47 judgment does is to look at what the statute says, because we shouldn't be looking at the extrinsic evidence of what happened in the 47 proceeding. We don't have a record. We don't know exactly what happened in that case. But if you look at the text of 47, the state gets the property only if there's an insufficient evidence to show that you could establish ownership. Has nothing to do with the final determination in the law of York's claim of possession. I do think that that means that a subsequent 47 proceeding in which he had the McNutt affidavit and the title would not be barred by res judicata, and Mr. York could probably, you know, bring his claim again with all the evidence that he needed to avoid, you know, because the award of the state is not an award of the state of right. It's really in the nature of a sheet. It means that a court has determined that there is no known contrary right of possession, and that's why the state is not, or the county is not acting contrary to any known property right and cannot perform a taking after the Article 47 judgment is entered.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. Court will hear rebuttal.
Justice Medina, I believe.
I'd like to answer your question that you posed earlier, whether this happens all the time in Wise County. Again, we're here before plea jurisdiction. We have the pleadings that show how this happens all the time. But I would also bring the court's attention to what we've quoted in our brief. Wise County's own attorney before the trial court in this case saying, anything that goes before any one of those hearings gets awarded to the county or to the state in Wise County. And furthermore, you have the affidavit of Sergeant Martinez and his opinions that these things cannot be returned to the public.
Thank you.
In these hearings, the JPs tend to go along with what the officers tell them the law is or what they should do. And if they're mistaken in that belief, it results in this happening over and over again. I'd like to correct something that counsel for Wise County said, and that he claimed that it's a crime to possess a vehicle with a missing VIN. Actually, the statutes that criminalize such action also create an exception for the owner of the vehicle or one who has the vehicle with the owner's permission. It is not a crime for them to possess, modify, or operate that trailer on the highways of the state of Texas. Indeed, the transportation code, I believe it is, and I think it's likewise cited in my brief, provides a mechanism for those whose property has lost its VIN, either getting knocked off, fallen off, or having the little stickers that curl up and peel off and fall off in the heat of the state of Texas, to apply to the Department of Public Safety for a replacement identification. Why would such a procedure be in place if the intent was that it were to go to the state?
Why doesn't any taking claim belong to the trustee of bankruptcy?
I'm
Why doesn't any taking claim belong to the trustee in bankruptcy?
I don't have enough working knowledge of the banking law to give you an answer to that. I do know that his bankruptcy has been closed for some time, although it was when it was active when this suit was instituted.
Usually the trustee owns or has control of the debtor's estate.
I don't have the answer to your question. I would like to address an issue that the state raised, and that is its assertion that York somehow had the burden in the hearing to show that ownership could be established at some later hearing. The code nowhere provides that he's required to make such a showing in the Chapter 47 hearing under 4701A. Indeed, that section places the burden on the state. It's the state's burden to prove that there's probable cause to believe that the property is stolen and that ownership cannot be determined. Lastly, the state and the Wise County have both taken the position during this case that if property lacks a VIN, it gives you reasonable suspicion to believe the property stolen. The Bigford case cited in our brief addresses that issue. Fifth Circuit held that a missing VIN plate along with a registration that hadn't yet been transferred over to the new owner does not provide probable cause for an officer to believe that property's been stolen. And it further holds that the officer cannot disregard additional evidence which tends to dissipate any probable cause that he may have to tend to believe that the property is stolen, such as Mr. York's evidence of his insurance records, his inspections by DPS, and all his other records that he presented. They've also taken the position that it creates an impossible situation to determine ownership when you have a missing VIN. And I know I'm out of time, if I could briefly conclude.
Complete your thought, Mr. Bishop.
I think if you take those two together, you're essentially giving the state both elements of Part B of Section 4701A. In other words, if it's got a missing VIN, they meet the probable cause to believe it's stolen, and they meet the second element of that test, that ownership cannot be determined, therefore it automatically goes to the state. You're essentially rendering Chapter 47 a forfeiture statute. If the legislature had intended that, they would have written that in the Transportation Code, Section 508, which allows a seizure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.